Okay, welcome to our joint board meeting. We have a discussion on leases, the definition of a lease. And I believe it's Scott who's going to do the introduction. Scott, please.
Great, thank you. Jumping right into our first topic, and our only topic of the day, one final aspect with respect to definition of a lease. As background, at the October 2014 joint meeting, the boards reached a number of decisions with respect to the definition of a lease. The boards reaffirmed that a lease exists when a customer controls the use of an identified asset for a period of time. An asset is identified if it is either explicitly or implicitly specified in the contract, and the supplier has no substantial right to substitute that asset during the applicable period of use. Meanwhile, the customer controls the use of an identified asset if it has the right to both direct the use of that asset and obtain substantially all of the potential economic benefits from directing its use during the applicable period. A supplier's protective rights in isolation would not prevent a customer from directing the use of an identified asset. The boards did not reach a decision on whether a customer must have the ability to derive the benefits from directing the use of an identified asset on its own or together with other resources that are sold separately or that can otherwise be sourced in a reasonable period of time in order for a contract to contain a lease. Agenda Paper 3A, FASB Memo 301 revisits this question. This paper includes three alternatives for the boards to consider. Alternative one would include this ability to derive the benefits requirement. The staff think there are two possible characterizations of the premise to this alternative. One view is that an entity does not control economic benefits as a result of the supplier's performance at lease commencement of making the underlying asset available to the customer if it does not have the ability to derive those benefits on its own or with other resources that are sold separately or that can otherwise be sourced in a reasonable period of time. Alternatively, another view of alternative one is that the customer controls some economic benefits, more or less consistent with the rationale for alternative three, which will be outlined momentarily, but that when the customer derives benefits from the arrangement, only together with the supplier's continuing performance throughout the period, the arrangement is fundamentally or predominantly a service. Alternative one concludes that in those cases, the right of use does not have substance separate from the supplier's continuing services in the contract, and that no separate right of use asset has been conveyed to the customer at the commencement date. Alternative three would not include the ability to derive the benefits requirement. Alternative three is premised on the view that there are inherent economic benefits to be derived from use in all physical assets, and the customer controls those benefits and therefore has a right of use asset that should be recognized whenever it has the right to direct the use of that asset and the right to obtain substantially all of the economic benefits stemming from those rights, even if the customer cannot realize those benefits independent of the supplier. That is, the customer controls these economic benefits because no other party can do so. The customer, by virtue of its right of use, is the only party that can obtain these potential economic benefits from use. Alternative two represents something of a middle ground between alternatives one and three. Conceptually, alternative two is closer to alternative one, but principally to address concerns about possible unintended consequences, applies the ability to derive the benefits requirement to only those contracts in which the asset is incidental to the delivery of services. The identified asset would be considered incidental only when the asset component is substantially less significant than the service or services component in the arrangement. The staff continued to recommend that the boards elect alternative three. Individual staff members' reasons for that recommendation are not uniform in all respects. However, the staff as a whole continue to think alternative three would contain a simpler, less complex definition of a lease that is less likely to result in implementation or application issues, would result in the best information for financial statement users, and would avoid any possible unintended consequences that could result from entities interpreting or applying alternative one incorrectly. As noted in paragraph 20 of the staff paper, since the October joint meeting, the staff have spoken with some large practitioners who have expressed the view that alternative one, if applied as they believe it is intended, would not result in any significant difference in the population of leases as compared to alternative three. largely because these practitioners believe that most services that are provided with a lease are also available separately. This will call into question the potential benefit of the additional ability to derive the benefits requirement. The staff do not recommend alternative two. While the staff think this alternative might reduce the possibility of unintended consequences from applying alternative one, it would require more guidance and be more complex to apply than alternative one for even less of an effect on lease versus non-lease conclusions as compared to alternative three, and would, as outlined in paragraph 27B of the paper, effectively apply a different approach based on the value of the underlying asset. That is, alternative one would effectively be applied to leases of low value assets, and alternative three would be applied to leases of higher value assets. With that, I will turn the discussion of this topic over to the boards.
Let me check.
I was going to say, Jim, why don't you start over there?
Oh, okay, great. Let me first check and see if Russ Golden is on the line. Russ, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Jim.
Okay, great. Any comments, questions on the views?
Jim, it's Russ. With respect to Scott's tee up, I thought it was a good tee up, and I appreciate the staff coming up with alternative two. I continue to believe, from a logic standpoint, alternative one is a pure answer. If this is a right to use, it seems like you need to have the ability to derive the benefits. But based on the research and based on the staff's analysis, I do agree that the incremental difference in financial reporting from alternative one versus alternative three is very minor. And I do think alternative three is probably easier to judge. So while I think alternative one is probably my preferred answer, I could accept alternative three.
I have the same view as Russ. I think alternative one's the best answer, and I think the challenges we've been receiving internationally about the definition of a lease and the reasonableness of decisions within our current definition have me leaning towards alternative one as the best answer, even though there may not be very many leases that are different for alternatives one and three. I firmly believe that if there was a lease that meets the criteria within alternative one, it should not qualify as a lease. And therefore, I prefer to go with alternative one, but given that the differences I don't think are going to be all that great, I could live with alternative three.
Other comments?
Same position as Tom and Russ. I they're interesting arguments in one and three, but the cost benefit sways me strongly to alternative three.
Mark?
I start out in alternative three for all the reasons Scott articulated in the tee up on the staff recommendation. I think it's easier, but I think the staff did a better job of articulating our alternative one in a way that makes it a little more operational. So I could probably live with alternative one because I think having a converged definition is more important if we ended up in that place. But my first choice would be alternative three.
Larry.
Can I ask a question about how alternative three works insofar as the implicitly specified notion of a contract? So you don't have a contract with an individual or a company that specifically specifies thou shalt use equipment A, but yet that contractor, let's call it, only owns one asset. Is that asset implicitly specified or not?
Well, I guess the first thing I would talk about is whatever answer I give you here won't differ under one.
I understand. I'm trying to figure out how the model works.
So let me try and reiterate your example is that the contractor only has one asset, but that asset is not identified, be it by VIN number, serial number, whatever, in the contract. I think both today
and tomorrow, it would be implicitly specified by the fact that it cannot fulfill the contract using any other asset. But remember that just because you have an implicitly specified asset does not mean you have a lease. You know, this goes back to examples we talked about last time about like a manufacturing plant, insurance factory. The factory itself is a specified or identified asset because there's only one of those plants. But just because there is an implicitly specified plant asset doesn't mean you control its use. And in our t-shirt example that we used last time, where you're just receiving all of the t-shirts that the factory produces, you don't have a lease. There is an implicitly specified asset, but you don't control its use. So that's why you don't have a lease. It's that second step.
And we had that flow chart that we had put together. You have to meet all the criteria of the definition of a lease, and the identified asset is just one piece of that.
It's just kind of the first step. You have to have an identified asset to then decide whether you control its use. And then if we went with alternative one or two in this paper, there'd be effectively a third requirement that says you have to have an identified asset, control its use, and we'd be adding in this ability to derive the benefits requirement.
So I don't deny the fact that alternative three is the simplest of what is on the table, but I'm concerned that it's just too inclusive, and I'd like for you to talk a little bit about, we say that the difference between three and one, when it comes down to it, that there's not much difference. But when I think about, for example, drilling rigs, and I think it's a lot different to say I need a drilling rig so I can drill some holes versus I need some holes drilled. And I think that the criterion that alternative one has, the ability to derive the benefits, that's a good way of distinguishing between those two fact patterns to explain the difference. And to me, if I need some holes drilled and I ask you to drill these holes for me, the fact that you happen to use a particular rig to do that doesn't mean that I'm controlling that rig.
The difference in the two scenarios you described, I want a rig to drill holes and I want you to drill me holes, is not captured by alternative one versus alternative three. It's captured in the control the use criteria that we were just talking about.
That's why I asked my question.
No. So to explain your question, this was kind of, we talked about this one, probably not specific to this scenario, in the public meeting last time. Well, for example, if I lay out a contract that says, go drill me these 10 holes at these geographic locations, you are not going to generally have a lease. However, if you instead have a contract that says for the next 3 years, I will, as the customer, direct where that rig is going to go and where it's going to drill, meaning I'm going to set for what purpose it will be used and whether it will be used, you know, whether it moves, whether it goes to this geographic location and drills here, whether it goes to this geographic location and drills here. I guess potentially you could decide, is it drilling for natural gas or oil? I don't know whether you can make that distinction with certain pieces of machinery, but that would be a different scenario than the scenario of simply go drill me 10 holes. And that would change your answer within the second step, the control the use criterion. If you move on, let's assume for a second that we're in the scenario where for 3 years I do direct how and for what purpose this rig is going to be used. I direct where it goes. So let's assume we conclude for a moment that you pass the control the use criterion. If you then move on to alternative one versus alternative three, the question is, can I, if the supplier were not willing to provide its service of operating the drilling rig, obtain other resources that are otherwise sold separately or that could be sourced separately to do it? And what we are finding, and you know, without trying to talk about specifically necessarily that contract, what we are finding and what we are hearing is that for most large classes of assets, somebody has found a way to be profitable selling those services separately. Somebody has decided, even if they don't lease trucks or lease ships or lease some sort of asset, that they can make money by being a service provider to those entities that do lease them or the customers that lease them, such that there's just not many things that aren't also sold separately by another provider if it's a major class of asset. That's why what we are hearing is that there aren't going to be too many cases where you're not going to have to conclude that, yes, there are resources out there that are sold separately that I could have come and steer my ship or maintain my truck or whatever it is out available in the marketplace.
Larry?
I think the difficulty that Darryl is having is similar to the difficulty that I'm having, and that is there's a fine line between the notion of controlling the use versus the ability to derive the benefits. Okay, and I'll give you a different example. If I'm on a construction site and I go to you and assume that you have one bulldozer and you're an independent contractor, and I say, I want to hire you to move that pile of dirt from point A to point B, you would, I think, turn to me and say, that's not a lease because I don't control the use of that particular asset, etc. Versus if I knew that it would take you, let's just say, a year and a day, so not to deal with the year thing, to move that pile, and I said, I want to effectively reserve the right to have you and your machine for the next year and a day, you'd say that is a lease. And I have difficulty distinguishing between those two things, because at the end of the day, I'm hiring you, in my mind, to move a pile of dirt, which is similar to drilling the holes that Darryl raised. So it might not have anything to do with the specific issue that you're bringing to us today. It's just, you know, how to apply the model in those circumstances. Because I don't know how different that is than me hiring your company to produce shirts that will take 100% of your output for 2 years.
So Larry, I have that same concern, but I don't think it has anything to do, at least in my mind, with the difference between one versus three.
I agree with you.
To me, it's the interaction of control the right to use with implicitly specified, and whether people are going to look at what traditionally, I'm not saying they're leases or service contracts, but what traditionally people thought were service contracts, and then try and either overthink or maybe not even overthink, but look at every piece of activity provided in a service contract to say, is this longer than a year, and is this piece of equipment that I didn't feel was really relevant to providing the service from the standpoint of what I contracted for, now a lease inside a service contract? But I don't think one or three resolves that.
I totally agree with you, which is why I can move to three, but it doesn't solve my problem. Right. Because, especially in three, you added this thing about insignificance.
So that must have been two?
Two.
Oh, was that two?
Yeah. It's two.
I'm sorry, I'm getting mixed up.
I just really want to spend a minute here, because this is where we spent a little time on this, and I understand it was 2 months ago. But this is where this ability to change how and for what purpose the asset is used is a vital part of the definition that we brought into control of the use. In your scenario of using a bulldozer for construction, okay, you are using an asset to fulfill a larger task. I have asked you to build me a building, and let's say that involves moving dirt. Okay, let's say it's a crane, it's a bulldozer. You can decide what purpose that you need a bulldozer to fulfill my order of building the building, but I cannot decide to take that bulldozer and move it to another project, right?
Right.
Right? That is fundamentally different from the scenario where for a year, I lock you up, and let's assume it's with you as an independent contractor to drive the bulldozer, and I decide what that bulldozer is going to do. If I want to move it over to my job site across the street, I can do that. If I want it to sit there and not run, I can do that. It's this fundamental notion that oftentimes there is going to be an asset that's necessary to fulfill a requested output. And we do not intend to capture those assets. It is capturing an asset where, for a period of time, I can decide whether that asset fills the first output I asked you, or I can change that output. I can continually change what that asset is used. To Jim's scenario, for example, like an outsourcing arrangement, which is what I think you're talking about, some of these ones like, you know, I have an IT outsourcing arrangement that by necessity requires X number of servers. If I don't have the right to decide that these servers are, nope, I'm actually going to take these servers out of your hosted data center and I'm going to come use them for whatever I want, the fact that there is an implicitly specified server is not going to turn that into lease. It is, I understand to some extent there's a nuance here, and when we've been discussing this with some of the practitioners, they seem to be catching on to this such that I think we'll be able to resolve this actually pretty clearly in practice. It's this notion that you have to be able to change how and for what purpose this asset is used throughout the lease term. You have to be the party that decides what this asset is going to do throughout the lease term, not just on the day you sign the contract, which, of course, if you set out a contract that says, I want you to build me a building, you know that is going to require a crane and a bulldozer. But it doesn't mean you control the specific crane and bulldozer that the contractor brings to the site on that first day that they start to build.
Are you suggesting that there has to be some sort of magic period of time involved?
No.
Or that it has to be multiple tasks?
No, there's no magic period of time. It's throughout the lease term. Let's take a simple example. If I lease the car that I have right now, I have a leased car that my wife drives. She can decide whether to drive it today. She can decide where it goes. She can decide whether it's going to haul groceries, haul the kids, all these different things. She can decide throughout my 3-year lease term what she can do with that asset. That is fundamentally equivalent to a notion that for 3 years I get a forklift or a bulldozer, and I can decide that it's going to be used at this job site, that job site. It's going to, you know, be used to mine for gold. It's going to be used to push dirt. But this notion that I decide for what purpose this asset can be used is the same in that example as it is in my wife's car. There is a fundamental difference between that and me coming to you, Daryl, and saying, Daryl, I would like you to build me a building. And you tell me, well, it's absolutely going to need me. I'm going to have to go out and either lease myself or use my own crane, my bulldozer, all this equipment. And you can decide, so long as you are building my building, that's your responsibility to me. You can decide whether that crane is the crane you use from day one through day 366 of building the building, or you can switch out cranes, go get a different one. You can decide whether the crane is going to be used to lift steel girders or do something else on the job site. You control how that asset is going to be used. Your responsibility is to fulfill the contract. And that does not give me rights to control how and for what purpose that asset that you are going to use to fulfill the output in the contract is used. And that is the fundamental difference, or that's the fundamental second step that comes before we even get to this alternative one versus alternative three.
Tom? Why I conceptually prefer alternative one is likely to vote for it, but can accept alternative three is the following scenario. I'm a deep underwater drill rig supplier. And I end up
in competition with others, building a rig that is specialized and better than anyone else's. And it's patented, and only my employees can operate it. So it's specialized assets, specialized services. No one else can supply that service, okay? Because no one else has the knowledge related to the unique patented item. And in those circumstances, which may be rare, I'm not sure whether I'm acquiring services from that particular supplier, or whether I'm directing a rig and getting services. In those settings, I think that I might be there's enough ambiguity that I would say it's not a lease. I'm not going to be able to direct the benefits myself because I don't have the ability to be able to operate it. No one else can operate it, and no one can be trained to operate it in a period of time.
Right, and those caveats, that's the exact type of scenario where we think alternative one would differ from alternative three, and it's important for anybody listening to understand all the caveats you put in there, that it's not the class of the asset that you just described that causes the answer. It's the fact that it is a highly specialized version of that, that nobody else is in the marketplace able to provide those services for in the manner that we've described. So you have correctly identified why we think this is a relatively small population, but the theoretical basis is just as you described it.
And I'm going to vote for alternative one because I don't think I want to stand up and say in those situations you have to have a lease.
So I'm in the same spot as Tom, but also don't think the difference between one and three. I think there's a more fundamental issue that Larry and Daryl point out. We're not talking about that today. I mean, in terms of resolution, or I think it's already been decided, but I am in the same spot as Tom, but could also live with alternative three because, and I think the staff has done a good job of pointing out that in most, and for all practical purposes, the difference would be very small. It's some very, you know, they say we haven't even identified the live fact pattern that would result in a difference. So I would, you know, in order to get to a converged answer, if it were the other way around, I could certainly live with. Hans, over to you.
Thank you, Jim. If I can start myself, at the end of the last meeting we had on this subject, I formulated something that came close to alternative two. With an extra lock on the door of the service component being overwhelmingly larger than the lease component. I can see why that is a bit more complex, even though it's a bit safer. I also feel very comfortable with the reformulation of alternative one, moving away from that readily available concept, which was, I thought, very too flexible. I think the staff came up with a much better solution. I think in practice it will not add much complexity for the very reason that in the overwhelming majority of cases, not many leases will be captured by this alternative. And at the same time, it does, if we would embrace this, it does show that we have been listening to many who have been telling us that we are trying to capture too much with this standard, and that contracts which are basically serves us should not be captured. So for that, all those reasons, I could live with alternative one. I would actually embrace alternative one to put this discussion to rest. Who else? Doug?
Yes, I rather prefer alternative two. I think alternative two covers only the narrow population, but it could cover, it could scope out some obvious service contract. For example, recently I had a contract of home security contract, and in that I have to have a alarm equipment. So could be a lease, but the majority of that contract is the service provided by security companies. So in that case, if we go down to the path of alternative two, we can easily scope out such kind of obvious service elements. So therefore, theoretically speaking, I think alternative three would be better, but I can live with alternative two.
Can I ask the staff a question just to clarify alternative one? So if I take the example that Tom was using, so the deep sea drilling rig that's very specialised in nature, so only Tom can operate it. If I was an alternative one and I was the customer, to use a neutral term, and I had a contract to access this asset with Tom operating it for me, but I could decide, let's say it's a relatively mobile rig, I don't know if there's such a thing, but I could decide where it gets moved to, how deep they drill. If I get worried about environmental concerns, I could decide to continue to pay, but say actually don't drill anymore. So I could make those sorts of sort of fundamental decisions about the asset. Would alternative one still say that that's not a lease because Tom is the only person who can actually operate the lease when I decide that I want him to?
Yeah, so I think the answer is yes. The one thing I'd add on to that is that, you know, as Scott said, and I think it's right, that Tom's example was very narrow. It's only Tom is the only person in the whole world that could operate that. And combined with that, Tom never provides those services. And you know, on a standalone basis, he never sells the rig, you know, separately and provides the services separately. So in that very narrow situation, yes.
And I guess that's where I struggle with alternative one. I think it's very important we do reach a converged solution on this. But the where I struggle with alternative one is that if I'd bought that rig, and I bought it, and I needed Tom to operate it for me, I'm not sure that we'd question whether or not I controlled the asset to recognise the purchase of that asset as my own. And I struggle a little bit about why it's so important to link the operation.
I think the example that Sue brought, it's a very interesting one. I've been discussing quite a lot with oil and gas operators in my own country about this, and I have the same struggle as Sue. So after reading this, what I meant, an excellent paper, and considered together with the previous paper, I do agree with staff that alternative three is the best one to pursue.
I'm piling on a little bit here. I agree with everything previous speakers have said about the complexity of one and two. My preference would be three, but my preference for three is because I actually think it is the right answer for pretty much what Sue said, I think. So I would be very much a supporter of three, and I am concerned that I don't think one produces the right answer in those very limited number of circumstances we're talking about.
We go.
Yeah, I fully support alternative three. In addition to Marlow, my major concern is the scope. If we want to take alternative one, then in any countries there are different kind of license, you know, and qualifications, and then we'll open a broad scope. People say, you know, things such as asset, even though it's specified, but have to be operated by a particular person with a particular license or qualification. Therefore, it is not lease. I don't think it's a good answer. So I worry about the scope, because from beginning, people feel alternative one will create no significant difference from alternative three. My concern is the difference may be very big. So I will rather keep alternative three.
Any others?
Alternative three, for all the reasons very well spelled out by Amaro and Wiggy.
I'd be happy with one or three. I wouldn't rule out one at all.
Gary? Yes, I could support. Yes, I guess I could support either one or three.
I absolutely prefer three. And just try to look downstream, assuming this standard was finalized as it is. The interpretations committee and the ITF, the inevitable question is going to come up with what does a reasonable period of time mean? What is readily available resource? What does your own resources mean? And then just thinking at some of, if it's a lease, it gets reassessed. What happens if these are not available to it up front, therefore it's a service, but you remodify the lease and they are available, what would you like to see? What, any number of knock-on issues trying to live with this thing going forward. For the very narrow set of circumstances that might fit in alternative one, I think alternative three is much easier for the collective boards to live with going forward. And I think since the staff hasn't really seemed to find any services that are not available out in the marketplace at this point, I think it might be more of a important academic issue, not a necessarily a broad-based real-life issue.
Yeah, except that this item, this issue has been coming back again and again and again to haunt us, also at ASAP. So I'd like you to keep that in mind. Why don't you start voting over there, Jim?
Okay. I didn't hear any support for alternative two, so how about we do it as our first choice, because I heard there was also a strong desire if there was a way to converge to get that. So I guess if we call it our first choice, whose first choice would be alternative one? That's three here, Russ.
My first choice is alternative one.
Alternative three, that's three. So Hans, if we do that, does that work for you? If we do this as tentative, we'll see where you guys are at. I think we have a sense for that, but we could come back and consider the impact of convergence.
Support alternative one.
Okay, first choice, alternative one.
Alternative three.
11.
1. Okay, well,
that's a
clear alternative three here.
Okay, so I think, as we've heard a number of our board members say, that they could live with three if that meant getting to a converged solution. So, let's call it this way. Now,
hey, Jim,
not your first choice.
Jim?
Yes, Russ.
Jim, I can't tell what the vote is at the ISB.
So it was
11 and 3.
11 for all three.
11 for alternative three.
6 for alternative.
Okay.
No, 2 for 1.
2 for alternative 1.
1.
Okay. So let's just call it who would support alternative 3, given what we just heard as the vote and the impact on convergence. That's
I would
6. And Tom, you're saying you would continue to support as your first choice alternative one?
Yeah, I'm really concerned about the concerns that are out there internationally about the definition of a lease and our non-responsiveness and the willingness to accept the standard without doing so.
Okay. So I guess
we'll deal with it, Tom. No worry for you.
Okay.